content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Hugh Bennett from North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from Triangle Business Journal. Today's program is underwritten by Highwoods Properties. With its headquarters in Raleigh, North Carolina, Highwoods, a real estate investment trust, is committed to making our communities better places to live and work. Highwoods can be reached at 866-449-6637. Our cover story this week, a balancing act. Small private colleges in the Triangle wrestle with enrollment declines and financial pressures. We'll start this week, as always, with the biz section, which is composed and written by managing editor Dane Huffman. Offices and pools now in vogue for homes. Architect Lewis Cherry of Raleigh compares designing a house for a client to making a tailored suit, a far different experience than buying something off the rack. Even in the Triangle, most homes, he said, aren't the product of architects. They're mostly designed by residential designers who specialize in more production-type homes, he said. Nothing wrong with that, of course. And Cherry, in a Raleigh career that dates to 1983, is seeing a profound change since the pandemic, as buyers seek homes integrated with the outdoors and more amenable to working. We were doing a large, elaborate home in Durham when COVID hit, and we were just starting construction, he said. The owner quickly realized that working from home is a serious thing, and he's going to need a real office. So we ended up doing an addition that created an actual full-on office with a conference area, a kitchenette, and technology. That trend is only accelerating. Cherry was recently named one of the top residential architects in the state by Forbes magazine, joining Ariel Schechter of Chapel Hill, Raleigh Architecture, and In Situ Studio in Raleigh on the list. One indication of the change is the desire for pools. Cherry said the types of homes he builds, usually costing millions of dollars, rarely sought a pool in the past. Hardly anybody built swimming pools 10 years ago, he said. Now, Cherry said, pools are all in high demand. So are rooms specifically designed for exercise, as the days of throwing laundry over the exercise bike are long gone. There was a growing market for exercise and fitness pre-COVID, but during COVID, people stopped going to gyms, he said, and it's one of those things that just kind of stuck. Cherry doesn't see the trend changing in the years ahead. Some of these things that are outgrowths of the pandemic are things that maybe were sleeping needs. They were undiscovered needs, he said. Cary real estate market gets national nod. Fast-growing Cary is getting some national attention. A recent study from WalletHub named Cary the second best real estate market in the U.S., due in large part to its relatively low cost of living. But housing affordability remains an issue. It can be a pricey to buy a house to begin with, as Cary ranks 96th for housing affordability, but that's still in the cheapest third of the 300 cities in our study, WalletHub noted. The median sales price for a single-family home in Cary in August was $690,000, according to Dorify MLS. Tour of Homes features Raleigh Mansion. A Raleigh mansion priced at $7.6 million leads the 2025 Triangle Parade of Homes as luxury real estate continues to grow. This year's event offers a peek at 219 new homes in Wake, Durham, Orange, and Chatham counties. D.R. Horton and Mungo Homes have the most homes on the list with 9 each. The event's first weekend is October 4th through 5th, with two more weekends to follow, October 10th through 12th and 17th through 19th. The free tours are open from noon to 5 p.m. each day. Raleigh PR leader dabbles in film production. A Raleigh public relations executive is finding success in a different realm of storytelling, film. Rick French, chairman and CEO of French West Vaughn, is the executive producer for the film Satisfied, which tells the story of original Hamilton cast member Renee Elise Goldsberry. Goldsberry played the original Angelica Schuyler in Hamilton, and the film details how she tries to balance raising a family while being a key member of a Broadway hit that exploded in popularity. The story is really about trying to have it all and balance motherhood while expanding her family with her career, French said. And as much as anything, I found that through line really interesting. The film opened in theaters across the country on September 30th. French has another film opening in December, Not Without Hope. That film and a documentary coming next year details the tragic boating accident in 2009 that claimed the life of former NC State University football star Corey Smith. San Jose flight still missing for RDU. Raleigh-Durham International Airport continues to add flights, most notably a direct flight to Dublin, but the airport is still missing some connections it had before the pandemic. Most notable among those, San Jose, California. That connection is a key one for investors looking to make the leap to Silicon Valley. RDU still maintains a direct flight to San Francisco, but as anyone who spent time in the Bay Area knows, traffic there is brutal. John Grant, an aviation industry expert, said adding a second location is a perennial question for airlines, whether new longer-haul routes work or merely dilute existing one-stop demand for an airline. We will turn now to the reporter pages, the first of which is Healthcare and Life Sciences, written by Zach Ezone. Pfizer-backed biotech readies expansion. A biotechnology firm in Durham backed by Rollvant Sciences and Pfizer has moved closer to securing approval of its lead drug. Priovant Therapeutics recently announced that a Phase 3 study hit its primary endpoint and 9 key secondary endpoints, demonstrating clinical improvement across various measurements. The drug called Prepocitinib aims to treat dermatomyositis, a rare inflammatory condition that causes muscle weakness and severe skin rash. It affects about 50,000 adults in the United States. Priovant, formed in 2021 through a partnership between Rollvant Sciences and Pfizer, with a focus on developing new treatments for rare autoimmune diseases with high morbidity and few existing treatments. Dermatomyositis is a multi-organ, multi-system inflammatory condition, Priovant CEO Ben Zimmer said. So in a very exciting way, we were able to show benefit on a lot of the different manifestations of the disease, including both skin disease and muscle disease. The company sees a big opportunity with the treatment, as the standard of care for dermatomyositis has mostly remained unchanged since the 1980s, with patients receiving a combination of corticosteroids and off-label immunosuppressive therapies. Chapel Hill firm hits key milestone. A biotech in Chapel Hill has hit another milestone in its effort to develop the first oral therapy for asthma. Artea Therapeutics recently reported positive results from one of its ongoing Phase 3 studies evaluating its lead drug, deprexamazole. The company is evaluating the treatment in 3 studies, which collectively include more than 3,000 patients. One of the studies, called Exhale-4, hit its primary endpoint, with the company's drug demonstrating statistically significant meaningful improvement in lung function, said CEO Jorge Bartolome. It's a positive step for the company that's trying to develop the first oral therapy to treat patients with severe uncontrolled asthma. This is a multi-billion dollar market that's currently dominated by injectable biologics. With the pill, we've been able to have biologic-like effects on eosinophil reduction and biologic-like lung function improvement, Bartolome said. This Phase 3 trial enrolled 600 patients around the world with a focus on improving lung function. The company is also evaluating deprexamazole in 2 other Phase 3 studies that focus on exacerbations or asthma attacks. Those 2 studies combined involve more than 2,000 patients. The company expects these 2 additional studies to be fully enrolled by first quarter 2026 and completed by first quarter 2027. Most asthma patients are on multiple inhalers. Currently, there are 4 injectable biologics approved to treat asthma. Artea wants to develop an oral therapy with the ease and accessibility of a pill. We've done a lot of research in this space, and what we believe is that by having an oral therapy, a lot more patients will make the decision to add another therapy on top of their inhalers, Bartolome said. Artea launched in 2022 with a late-stage drug called Dexpramacazole and $350 million in capital. The company in early 2024 added $75 million to its funding total. $5 million health center plan for Wendell. Wake Radiology and UNC Health are planning a new diagnostic center in a fast-growing part of Wake County. WR Imaging, a joint venture between Wake Radiology Physicians and UNC Health Rex in September, filed an application with the NC Department of Health and Human Services to acquire diagnostic equipment and develop the center in Wendell. The application proposes a new diagnostic center with mammography, ultrasound, CT scanner, X-ray, and other medical equipment. Some of this equipment requires review under the state certificate of need law, while some does not. In total, the project is expected to cost about $4.96 million. The Wendell Center would help address the area's growing healthcare needs and the rising demand for freestanding imaging services, according to the project application. The proposed site, called Wake Radiology UNC Rex Healthcare, is a building under construction on Oliver Falls Lane in Treelight Square. Duke Health loses bid for $225 million hospital. Duke Health has fallen short in its latest attempt to expand outside of the Triangle. The North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services has approved an application from Cone Health to build a new hospital in Mebane over a joint proposal from Duke and Novant Health. This would have been Duke's latest expansion after acquiring a hospital in the Charlotte area earlier this year. Duke and Novant proposed a 46-bed hospital in Mebane on land Duke owns along Gregory Poole Lane. The capital expenditure for the project was set at $225 million, which Duke and Novant would have evenly split, according to the project application. Lauren Onosorge is bringing us the Technology in EchoDevo page. Her main story this week, multiple Raleigh sites pitched to global firms. A team from the Triangle recently flew to the Big Apple to sell global companies on Raleigh and the surrounding area. Kyle Touchstone, Economic Development Director for Raleigh, and Michael Haley, Executive Director of Wake County Economic Development, traveled to New York in mid-September. It was a short trip that could lead to major job announcements in the Triangle as companies eye Raleigh for expansion sites, hubs, and even headquarter locations. When you're talking to these site selectors, many of whom have done projects here, they remain so bullish on Raleigh, Haley said. I wouldn't be surprised if some good things happen because of it. So where are companies from manufacturing to life sciences looking? Touchstone said mixed-use developments are a major part of conversations with site selection consultants. The Raleigh locations being marketed include downtown, North Hills, Raleigh Iron Works, the Sports and Entertainment District, Centennial Campus, Glen Lake Office Park, and even long-delayed Downtown South Project. Office space is in abundance in those areas as the Triangle faces a vacancy rate above 20% when including sublease space. I really look at downtown Raleigh as being ultimately a mixed-use development, and those are always front of mind whenever I'm in front of decision-makers and people working with companies weighing an expansion for a relocation, Touchstone said. Haley added Research Triangle Park, the western area of Cary, Holly Springs, and eastern Wake County to the list. Having options, he said, is important. Wake County's pipeline remains active, he said, with 41 ongoing projects. Companies the team has engaged with in the past 30 to 60 days. If all are won, that would mean over 12,000 jobs. Touchstone and Haley are targeting three main sectors, life sciences, tech, and advanced manufacturing. We have been for such a long time the global destination for life sciences, and we're seeing just an acceleration of that over the last 5 years, Haley said, and I'm expecting continued growth and success in that segment. Electric aircraft firm with local ties seeks IPO. An Amazon-backed electric aircraft firm with an office in the Triangle has filed to go public. Beta Technologies, which has been quietly building up its Morrisville office, did not disclose the size or terms of its offering. It's planning to trade on the New York Stock Exchange under the symbol Beta, B-E-T-A. The aircraft manufacturer, headquartered in Vermont, has been hiring in the Triangle for years, attracted in part by the Power America Institute at NC State University. As of last year, it had about 40 employees off Aviation Parkway on the north side of Interstate 40. Ting CEO not deterred by Google Fiber. It was 2015 when a Toronto mobile technology company swooped in to fill in the gaps Google Fiber left behind. Ting Mobile took a big bet on North Carolina, starting with Holly Springs. A decade later, it serves more than 40,000 addresses in North Carolina. Ting's longevity in the market in some ways comes down to its focus, Ting CEO Elliot Noss said. Holly Springs, he said, was an example of a small but successful footprint. The firm has expanded to Fuquay-Varina and Wake Forest, But Na said additional territories in North Carolina aren't on the table now. Fashion brand shuts down in Raleigh. A fashion brand that leveraged TikTok into deals with national chains is shutting down. Sani, a Raleigh startup co-founded by sisters Nikki and Ritika Shamdasani, started with what they saw as a problem in the retail space. It's hard to shop for Indian weddings in America. So the sisters developed a fashion brand inspired by South Asian culture. Their TikTok videos that went viral, including one that cold emailed to Pete Nordstrom, co-CEO of the department store chain, which led to Sani's products being landed in Nordstrom stores. But on September 25th, the sisters announced they would close. Nikki Shamdasani posted on LinkedIn, "For a long time, we thought quitting meant a lack of grit, but we've now learned that quitting can also be how you honor the work and make room for what's next." The Greater Triangle section of the TBJ is written by Ben Tobin. In Chatham County, developers seek target Publix for Pittsburgh. Local developers have big ambitions to bring a national grocery chain or big box store to the Pittsburgh area as eastern Chatham County rides a sizzling growth streak. Rahab and Yezin Hamad of commercial real estate firm Triland Commercial in Cary are looking for tenants for Cooper's Ridge, a 30-acre mixed-use development at 1700 Hillsborough Street in Pittsburgh. The site is just south of Highway 64 between downtown Pittsburgh and the Chatham Park Master Plan community. An LLC, Cooper's Ridge 1, that lists Yezin Hamad as the registered agent in North Carolina's Secretary of State filings, closed on the property last month for roughly $5 million. Yezin Hamad said potential anchor tenants the married couple is interested in for the space are Publix, Target, Home Depot, and Harris Teeter, which would all be new to Pittsburgh. "We think those stores would be an ideal use for the area," Yezin said. He declined to share what conversations he's having with potential tenants. The Pittsburgh Board of Commissioners voted in June to approve a rezoning for the property that clears the way for a mixed-use project. "The anchor store could be up to 150,000 square feet," Rahab said, "and the project could also include residential and office components and commercial out parcels. It's kind of like putting together a puzzle here, and we're just trying to make sure that we understand all the different moving pieces and are choosy with where the pieces go," Rahab said. Pittsburgh isn't the only town in the area looking to attract big-name retail brands. Last month, the Clayton Town Council in Johnston County approved a rezoning that allows real estate firm Casto to move forward with a $100 million shopping center with a major anchor tenant. And earlier this month, the Sanford City Council in Lee County approved millions of dollars in incentives to lure Casto to redevelop a blighted shopping center. In Harnett County, Popeye's restaurant sold for millions. A popular fried chicken chain's new restaurant in a booming North Carolina county has sold for millions to an out-of-state buyer in the latest real estate deal involving the chain. DPT Realty purchased the Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen at 1517 NC Highway 24, southwest Harnett County, for $2.4 million in August, according to Harnett County deed records. The building is nearly 2,000 square feet and sits on a little more than 1 acre. It was built in 2024, per property records. DPT Realty is a Connecticut-based LLC that lists Charlotte lawyer Jacob Johnson as the registered agent and Stamford, Connecticut-based Virinyakadu Toka as a manager, according to filings with the North Carolina Secretary of State's office. Toka's contact information was not listed on filings. The seller was an Ohio entity called C.T. Spout Springs with a Cincinnati address. Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen was originally founded by entrepreneur Alvin C. Copeland Sr. in a New Orleans suburb in 1972 under the name Chicken on the Run, serving the Cajun-style fried chicken the chain is known for today. The company was acquired by Canadian giant restaurant Brands International, owner of Burger King, Tim Hortons, and Firehouse Subs in 2017 for $1.8 billion. In Carthage, northern Moore County attracts New York investor. Medical space in a small town in the Greater Triangle has sold for millions to a New York-based buyer. NCDA Property, an LLC that lists Patrick Consalvis as a member, purchased the DaVita Dialysis Building at 165 Garden Drive in the Moore County town of Carthage this month for close to $2 million, according to deed records. The 6,536-square-foot building sits on roughly an acre and was built in 2010, according to Moore County property records. Consalvis, who's a commercial real estate broker, according to his LinkedIn account, did not respond to requests seeking comment on the purchase. NCDA Property LLC lists the principal address in Commack, New York, according to filings with the North Carolina Secretary of State's office. Recently, when major investments like this have occurred in Moore County, it's in the southern portion of the county around Pinehurst, Southern Pines, and Aberdeen. Carthage, which is up Highway 501 from Pinehurst, has about a fifth of the population of Southern Pines, where investments have skyrocketed. But the small town in northern Moore County has been seeing some attention as of late. The next reporter page is Real Estate and Development, which is written by Kaylee Thompson. NC State to add student housing. The growing school now has 28,000 undergraduates for the fall of 2025. A collection of parcels adjacent to NC State University's Centennial Campus is being targeted for more student housing. A rezoning application has been filed with the City of Raleigh for 17 parcels bordered by Avent Ferry Road, Broadwell Drive, and Chapel Drive in West Raleigh. The rezoning request is to fulfill two purposes: create one zoning across the whole site and increase density so that more student housing can be developed to accommodate growing enrollment in NC State. Total enrollment at the school is now around 40,000. Undergraduate enrollment has grown from 22,000 in 2016 to nearly 28,000 for the fall 2025 semester, according to NC State data. The proposal is to rezone the property from residential 10, which is residential mixed use up to three stories, and conservation management to residential mixed use up to four stories. There is no developer listed on the application, so it's unclear how many student housing units would be built. The properties are owned by two separate entities, Dominion Raleigh and Highway 52 and Uni LLC. Currently, there are several rental properties on site. There are 59 units spread across 19 single and two-story buildings. Most were built in the 1950s and 60s. All the buildings would be torn down to build student housing. The application states that the site would allow students to walk, bike, or take transit to class. Student housing projects around NC State have increased in number. Most notable is the massive hub on campus under construction along Hillsborough Street with more than 2,000 beds. Others include 19 townhomes on Avent Ferry Road across from the Avent Ferry Shopping Center, a Gorman Street property near South Campus could be rezoned for student housing, and the Price Company is building College View Apartments near South Campus. In Durham, office buildings are to be raised for apartments. A real estate firm has acquired a group of office buildings in Durham with plans to tear them down for a new housing development. Multifamily developer Wood Partners of Atlanta paid $11.05 million for three office buildings and two parking lots in the Durham Summit Office Park, according to deed records. The combined assessed value of the properties is $26.4 million. The buildings are Summit 2, 3, and 4. All of the buildings are vacant and will be demolished, said Caitlin Shelby, managing director at Wood Partners. The seller, Charlotte-based Beacon Partners, had the property rezoned in November 2023 to allow for a multifamily community, while Beacon planned for 360 units. Wood will build 312 units in three- and four-story buildings. The community will have a swimming pool, dog park, dog spa, and open space. Shelby said construction will start in October and will be complete by summer of 2027. Outside 540, a Dallas developer is planning Northeast Raleigh apartments. A multifamily developer is joining the swell of housing projects planned and proposed for Northeast Raleigh. Trammell Crow Residential of Dallas has filed site plans for Alexan Oaks Apartments on Old Mill Burney Road, just outside Interstate 540, with 294 units. The stretch of Old Mill Burney Road from Interstate 540 to Buffalo Road, where the new Publix is filled with projects under construction or in the pipeline. Pulte Group bought 100 acres for a 267-lot project, and near the proposed Alexan Oaks is the under-construction Allen Park community, which will have 624 homes. Alexan Oaks will have 172 one-bedroom units, 116 two-bedroom units, and 6 3-bedroom units spread across 6 4-story buildings. And finally, Landmark Office Tower sold for bargain price. After an initial deal to acquire and convert a Landmark office tower in Durham fell through, a new buyer has emerged with plans to keep it as office space. Durham real estate firm Dilwig has sold University Tower for $12 million to GM 150 LLC, according to Durham County deed records. North Carolina Secretary of State filing, so GM 150 is registered to Gent Hito, longtime CEO of communications software firm Slash N Software in Chapel Hill. Hito also co-founded C Data Software, which he served as president until 2021. The 17-story tower at 3100 Tower Boulevard was originally listed for $18 million in February. In May, the building was taken off the market. The 185,978-square-foot building went back on the market in June when the price dropped to $12 million at a new listing agency, Bull Realty. The property was previously listed exclusively by JLL. Real estate sources said the new owner is keeping the building strictly as office space. Dilwig has been selling off properties as it navigates the sluggish commercial real estate market. The sale of University Tower brings the company's holdings in the triangle to one building, the Quadrangle in Chapel Hill. University Tower is currently 33% leased, according to the LoopNet listing. Dane Huffman brings us news from on the coast. In the Outer Banks, there's a grassroots push to save Ocracoke ferries. A grassroots effort to advocate for support of Ocracoke Island found itself with a sudden challenge, the potential slashing of ferry service. Ferries are essential to Ocracoke as the only way to reach the remote island on the North Carolina coast, but funding for the service appears to be stalled in the back and forth between the Senate and House over the North Carolina budget. It's our sense that our elected officials in Raleigh don't have a problem with the funding, said Justin LeBlanc, an Ocracoke resident who's one of the leaders of the Ocracoke Access Alliance. We're just caught up in the impasse. LeBlanc, a government affairs consultant, and his wife, a local business owner, helped launch the alliance in September, thinking it would be more of a long-term way to help support businesses on the island. We realized there was really a need for an additional voice from the business community advocating for transportation and infrastructure projects that affect our island, he said. For example, Highway 12 is often impacted by storms. But soon after the group formed, the ferry issue arose, what LeBlanc called a fire drill. In the absence of a state comprehensive budget that has sort of left that additional funding in the lurch, he said. LeBlanc said the local representatives are supportive of the funding, but cutbacks could come if funding isn't available. A ferry schedule, for example, shows the elimination of one of the three times the ferry runs between Ocracoke and Cedar Island in the fall. LeBlanc said the Ocracoke Access Alliance currently has several dozen members, but is gaining traction and adding resources. The goal is a consistent voice for the island on state and national issues that impact it, especially when it comes to critical connections such as ferries. Our local county, Hyde County, does a lot of hard work for our community, LeBlanc said, but an additional voice needs to be brought to the table. NC grants fund coastal improvements. The North Carolina Department of Environmental Quality's Division of Coastal Management has awarded more than $2.25 million in grants to fund 10 projects that will expand and improve public access to the state's beaches and coastal waterways. The grants will help local governments acquire land for public access sites and construct or enhance amenities. For example, $120,000 will go to the town of Beaufort to help build a park at the end of Ann Street, which is in the center of town. The money will help fund an observation deck, green space, and more. In Wilmington, an area adds a social district. A popular part of Wilmington is going to add times when it becomes a social district, but not without some pushback. The Brooklyn Arts District will allow people to walk around with alcohol on 2 Saturdays out of the month, following a recent vote by the Wilmington City Council. The district had pushed for all Saturdays. The area located not far from the Cape Fear River downtown will be a social district on the first and third Saturdays from noon to 5 p.m. beginning October 4th. Several businesses said the move would help promote sales. Also in Wilmington, the port is looking to deepen harbor. North Carolina's biggest port is pushing a plan to deepen its harbor in order to receive more cargo from larger container ships. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers has released a report supporting a plan to deepen Wilmington's harbor from 42 feet to 47 feet. The project would take 6 years and cost nearly $1.4 billion, the report said. Dredging the port of Wilmington by just a few feet could have significant economic impacts for the port, which has fallen behind other ports in the race for cargo. As container ships have grown to massive sizes, they require deeper harbors in order to load and offload cargo. That has led ports across the country to spend billions on dredging. The port of Charleston in South Carolina, for example, has the deepest harbor on the East Coast at 52 feet, a project completed in 2022. Our cover story this week is a focus on higher education. Small colleges, big challenges. Smaller NC institutions face enrollment and financial hurdles. Zach Ezone is the writer of the cover story this week. William Peace University operated as a women's college for more than a century before its major shift in 2012 to a co-ed institution. As enrollment has mostly declined over the past decade from 1,077 total students in fall of 2014 to 730 in the fall of 2023, the university is pivoting again. After operating as a residential college in downtown Raleigh for most of its history, William Peace is investing more in online programs geared toward working adults and is growing its number of transfer students as it develops new partnerships with community colleges aimed at making it easier for students to complete their bachelor's degrees at the university. The university, which shifted from a two-year school to a four-year school in the 1990s, is also considering adding graduate degree programs. "We're diversifying our revenue streams and our enrollment pipelines," President Lynn Morton said. These changes come amid an increasingly challenging environment for higher education, especially small private colleges. University leaders have long been concerned about the so-called demographic or enrollment cliff, a projected decline in the number of high school graduates and traditional age college students. While a growing population makes the situation less dire in North Carolina, colleges and universities throughout the state are still feeling the effects. Elon University recently agreed to merge with Queen's University of Charlotte as the latter experiences significant financial challenges. Earlier this year, St. Andrews University, a small private college in Laurinburg, closed. St. Augustine's University in Raleigh has struggled financially for years, accumulating millions of dollars of debt and jeopardizing its accreditation. And beyond closures and mergers, many small colleges are showing signs of financial distress. Both Barton College in Wilson and Meredith College in Raleigh in recent years have violated certain financial covenants tied to bonds the schools previously issued for capital projects, according to annual financial reports and public bond disclosures. Some of William Peace's changes are already proving to be beneficial, with total enrollment up nearly 8% this fall. "We talk a lot about our mission and what we do for the region and what we do for students and how proud we are of our alumni, but we are businesses," Morton said. "And if we aren't savvy business people and we aren't thinking about the market and who we're marketing to and how we're going to thrive financially, then we will not make it." But the stakes are high for communities throughout North Carolina where these colleges play a critical role. These small colleges are often economic engines of the local community, especially in rural areas, said Robert Kelchin, professor and head of the Department of Educational Leadership and Policy Studies at the University of Tennessee. "Even a college with 1,000 students can have easily 100 or more direct employees or people who are supported by the college through local businesses." After years of declining enrollment, Meredith in July laid off about 6% of its employees as it tries to balance its budget. The cuts came months after S&P Global Ratings lowered the agency's rating on Meredith's revenue bonds from BBB plus to BBB and assigned the school a negative outlook. S&P Global Ratings made the change in February, 2 months after the college informed bondholders that was not in compliance with certain debt covenants at the end of its previous fiscal year. The North Carolina Capital Facilities Finance Agency issued revenue bonds for Meredith in 2016 and 2018 for totals of about $8.13 million and $40.96 million, respectively. The General Assembly created the agency in the 1980s to extend the benefits of tax-exempt financing to nonprofit private colleges and universities. Colleges typically rely on these bonds to fund capital projects. Meredith has certain covenants associated with these bonds, according to public bond disclosures. This includes the requirement to maintain a debt service coverage ratio of at least one, which is just enough operating income to fully cover annual debt payments. However, the college fell short of that threshold with a debt service coverage ratio of 0.65 as of June 30th of 2024. Meredith declined to make President Amy Sapp available for an interview. In a statement in July, Meredith spokesperson Melissa Allen said, "Meredith College leaders are confident in plans to improve enrollment and continue strengthening its overall financial picture." Nationally, schools violating their debt covenants is becoming a more common occurrence, said Vicky Stavropoulos, an analyst at S&P Global. The credit rating agency identified more than 10 institutions with some sort of covenant violation in 2024, most of which were related to debt service coverage ratio. NC Wesleyan University in Rocky Mount over the past two fiscal years has reported violating debt covenants related to a $2.5 million credit facility with an unnamed bank, according to the university's 2023 and 2024 financial reports. The bank waived the violations. Most of the time, these violations do not trigger an actual default, although if a default were to occur, bondholders could pursue remedies like accelerating repayment, said Mary Nash Rusher, a bond attorney with McGuire Woods in Raleigh. It's not likely to trigger any actual default and remedies unless it's persistent and keeps going and doesn't get better, Rusher said. A covenant default, like a debt service coverage ratio, at some point means you don't have enough revenue to cover your debt service, and so it's going to morph into a payment default, and then you're in serious trouble. Institutions develop and present plans to bondholders on how they will avoid additional covenant violations in the future. This often involves measures intended to increase revenue and decrease expenses. Meredith, for example, outlined its plans in a bond filing earlier this year to restructure its enrollment process and create a new executive-level position to oversee its enrollment management division. Meredith is also launching a new academic programs aimed at meeting market demand, including a nursing program and data science majors. But some of these steps can take time. Schools looking for a short-term solution often draws more money from their endowment to support operations, Stavropoulos said. A lot of these institutions have less financial resources and have less financial flexibility, Stavropoulos said. So if we see persistent larger endowment draws, obviously that could impact their financial resources more materially. Barton College in Wilson, for example, in 2023, violated two debt covenants related to bonds the college issued in 2018, the college disclosed in a public bond filing. The school's long-term debt service coverage ratio fell below its 1.2 requirement, and its days cash on hand dipped below a minimum of 50 to 33. According to a letter Danny Davis, Vice President for Administration and Finance at Barton, sent to a representative of bond trustee Wilmington Trust N.A. in November 2023. Davis did not respond to a request for comment. The college, in response, hired an independent consultant to find ways to increase income and decrease operating expenses, according to the letter. A year later, the school's net tuition, its main source of revenue, dipped by a little more than $1 million, and its total operating expenses declined from $32.37 million to $31.95 million, according to annual financial reports. Barton College appropriated its $8 million from its endowment for expenditure, including about $7.77 million of donor-restricted funds. This is a major jump from the year before, when the school drew about $1.48 million from its endowment for expenditure. At Shaw University, the Board of Trustees in March approved a resolution authorizing a $14 million line of credit from the university's restricted and unrestricted endowments. The university can use these funds to satisfy urgent liquidity needs as they arise, and will execute agreements to repay any funds withdrawn from the endowment under terms that are both fiduciarily responsible and timely, according to Shaw's 2024 financial report. While these endowment draws can help colleges address short-term needs, it's not a long-term solution to their financial challenges. We view the persistency of taking supplemental endowment draws as an unsustainable practice, Stavropoulos said. Especially with some of our lower-rated institutions, it can make a material impact on that resource base and reduce their financial flexibility even further. Having a healthy endowment to draw from is often an important factor for successful colleges, said Joshua Lassiter, managing director of First Trion Advisors Operational Consulting Practice. A lot of the really healthy small colleges, the budget for running like colleges, some portion of that is coming from the endowment's earnings, Lassiter said. But it's just a challenging spot if you're a small private college without a differentiator in the market and an endowment that's less than $50 million or $75 million. There's a growing divide in higher education between the universities in strong financial position and those that are struggling. For the past 3 years, S&P Global Ratings has assigned the higher education sector with a mixed outlook. The agency assigned institutions with broad geographic reach, steady demand, and sufficient liquidity with a stable outlook. Meanwhile, the agency has a negative outlook on highly regional, less selective schools with limited financial flexibility. Many of the colleges in financial distress are smaller and have minimal resources to protect them if enrollment, their main source of revenue, drops, said Larry Ladd, a specialist with the Association of Governing Boards of Universities and Colleges. Every college university has surprises, Ladd said. You might have expected a freshman class of 500, and you got 450, which is very serious for a small private college. Smaller private schools are more heavily dependent on tuition revenue from enrollment compared to larger private colleges such as Duke University, which has other sources of revenue, and public universities, which are supported with state funding. Many smaller private colleges have seen their undergraduate enrollment decline over the past decade, with further uncertainty ahead. Declining enrollment, revenue, and cash flow are some of the biggest predictors of college closures, Kelchin said. A lot of these colleges have pretty high fixed costs with employees they either don't want to lay off or it's very difficult to lay off with tenure, Kelchin said. And then there are costs for facilities, being pretty high and sticky. If revenue declines, they're in a very difficult spot, especially as they don't have much in the way of endowments to support. Kelchin in December published a paper with Federal Reserve Bank Philadelphia predicting college closures and financial distress. The goal of the paper was to identify which factors led to the closures of small colleges that often serve as economic engines of their local communities. Last year, 17 private nonprofit colleges closed in the United States, which was the highest number seen in the past 30 years, Kelchin said. This is a relatively small share of the couple thousand private nonprofit colleges throughout the country, but many more are facing difficult financial positions. They're making some pretty large cuts, while they still have a little bit of financial runway in order to stay open, Kelchin said. But they're staying open in a diminished state, which raises questions about, can they offer a quality education to students, or are they just surviving more for the sake of survival? Uncertainty at the federal government is further complicating the situation, as some colleges are seeing delays in receiving financial aid payments, Kelchin said. Meanwhile, larger schools are seeing declines in international students and accepting more students off their wait lists in response, especially pulling students who may have planned to enroll elsewhere. Even if these issues only affect a few students at a college, it can lead to problems. These are small organizations, and by the time they realize they're running out of money, or maybe the utility bill was too high 1 month and they're tapped out their lines of credit, and they realize we can't make payroll going forward, Kelchin said. As the proof of potential undergraduate students, the pool of potential undergraduate students shrinks, competition for enrollment has increased across higher education. To prop up enrollment and attract students, colleges often give out large, unfunded scholarships, but these discounts minimize the financial benefit from these additional students. The campus looks full, but financially it's empty, Kelchin said. Colleges across the country and in the Triangle have increased the amount of tuition they're discounting over the past decade. For example, Meredith College discounted about 37.6% of gross tuition in fiscal year 2016 and 51.6% in fiscal year 2024. The college saw its net tuition revenue during the same period decline from $37.05 million to $29.03 million. Other colleges in the region saw similar increases in discounted tuition rates. William Peace's discounted tuition rate grew from 40.8% to 50% between fiscal years 2016 and 2024. NC Wesleyan University saw its rate increase from 42.9% to 57.6% between fiscal years 2016 and 2024. Many schools wrestled with how to set their discount rate, Laster said. Private colleges have higher initial price tags compared to public universities and therefore offer both funded and unfunded scholarships that ultimately lower the cost. But some colleges are pushing to change this practice and advertise to potential students the true cost to attend without relying on discounts to lower the price. One side of the argument is it's a whole lot cheaper to the consumer what they're having to pay, Laster said. On the other end, folks will say that families and students like the sound or the impression of getting a big scholarship. Schools need to understand how much it costs them to educate students when setting these rates, Laster said. Schools also need to offer these discounts based on the goals they're trying to accomplish. Are you targeting a certain academic profile that's aligned with your mission, Laster said, or do you not have a strategy at all? And if that's the case, that's probably not ideal. Despite the limited returns, discounting tuition can still be worth it to bring in more students, Ladd said. Any amount of cash helps, Ladd said, so if you're getting only $5,000 per student, but you wouldn't have that student otherwise, and you have the capacity to educate the student, $5,000 is still $5,000. Colleges often try to grow their way out of these challenges by investing in online programs, starting graduate programs, and launching more career-focused undergraduate programs in areas with high demand, like healthcare. But ultimately, it's difficult to make this strategy work due to the level of competition among online and graduate programs and the cost of running expensive health sciences programs. It requires being really intentional about what's your niche in the market and why are students going to your institution instead of somewhere else, Ketchum said. Colleges need to address these challenges, whether it be through cuts or investments, with a long-term view, Laster said. If you're not planning for the long term, iteratively being proactive about the things you can do without or the things you can do with less of, so that you can invest in other areas, then you can end up in the really urgent spot that some of these privates find themselves in, where now the measures have to be drastic and draconian, Lassiter said. As William Peace transforms, the university is also returning to its roots. The university recently unveiled new branding and a new logo with just the name Peace and the year 1857, acknowledging its founding year. The university continues to push in new directions. In late August, William Peace announced a partnership that will allow students who have earned an associate's degree at Wake Technical Community College to transfer to William Peace to pursue a bachelor's degree at a designated tuition rate. The university earlier this year also launched a new program designed to cover the cost tuition for students from North Carolina who meet certain eligibility requirements. Eligible students for the program, called the Peace Pledge, will have their tuition covered through a combination of federal Pell Grants, North Carolina scholarships, and institutional aid. William Peace is also actively looking at whether it can add graduate programs to its offerings as another way to diversify its revenue and enrollment pipelines. The university is already seeing returns on its investments into online programs and emphasis on transfer students. Online student numbers and transfer student enrollment is up 14% and 48%, respectively, this fall. After losing some alumni support in 2012 when it dropped being all female, the university has also invested in its fundraising team as it prepares for its next major campaign. William Peace recently secured a $5 million donation, the university's largest one-time gift, which will help support its scholarship programs. There are many of us in small schools who were thriving and many of us who are climbing and building, knowing that if we don't do that and we're not entrepreneurial and we're not building, then we're losing ground, Morton said. So there's this constant balancing act between living within your budget, building what you need to build, and making sure that the decisions you make are strategic. Morton, in May 2024, became president of William Peace with the aim of serving a two-year term. The goal of this interim tenure, Morton said, is to put the university in the best possible condition for the next president. I feel very confident that what I and the senior leadership team and the Board of Trustees have worked on this year and will work on next year are the exact right foundational things we need to do to position us for the future to thrive, not survive, but thrive, Morton said. We've got time for a few other articles here. Wolfspeed exits bankruptcy and shakes up board. This one written by Lauren Onosorge. Following a wild day of trading on Wall Street, Wolfspeed exited Chapter 11 bankruptcy on September 29th and is kicking off its next chapter with a board overhaul. Six legacy board members have departed, including Chairman Tom Werner, who led the company for several months following the ouster of former CEO Greg Lowe last year and had served on the board since 2006. That will be replaced by a lineup of industry veterans. Other departures include Glenda Dorchak, who had served since 2020, John Hodge, 2018, Darren Jackson, 2016, D. Luan Lay, 2018, and Marvin Riley of 2021. The exits mark the latest in a series of leadership changes amid Wolfspeed's restructuring that includes a new chief operating officer and chief financial officer. Stepping in as directors on the board are Anthony Abate, chairman of GTT Communications and former COO of Echo 360, Mike Boken, former vice president of worldwide sales at Micron, Eric Musser, former president and COO of Corning, Inc., Hong Q. Hao, CEO of Semtech, and Ardis Bolase, vice president of finance at Renesas Electronics Corp., a semiconductor firm that was also one of Wolfspeed's largest creditors. Abate will take over as board chairman. The new members join newly affirmed directors Mark Jensen and Paul Walsh, who will remain on the board. Wolfspeed is based in Durham. It exits bankruptcy with a 70% reduction in debt, according to the company. Wolfspeed stock soared September 29th. Shares were canceled and new ones issued as part of the process. Shares closed at more than 1,700% at $22.10, but legacy shareholders saw their shares, as expected, worthless fractions of the shares in the newly exited company. The Chapter 11 filing followed months of mounting debt and uncertainty. Under new CEO Robert Furrell, Wolfspeed filed for a prepackaged reorganization in June. Here's an article near to my heart. Longleaf Swine to open second location. A downtown Raleigh barbecue spot that's emerged as a local favorite is adding a second location as the city's barbecue offerings continue to grow. Longleaf Swine plans to open in Greystone Village in the former home of the Sawmill Tap Room. We're currently aiming for an opening in the fall of 2026, said Adam Cunningham, one of the co-owners of Longleaf Swine. Sawmill Tap Room closed in the spring of 2023, and the space has been unoccupied since that time. Longleaf opened its current location in the old Oakwood Cafe space in late 2022. The expansion plans continue a remarkable barbecue resurgence in Raleigh. The Pit, owned by Greg Hatem, opened in the Warehouse District in 2007. Sam Jones opened on Lenore Street in 2021, and North Hills added the Barbecue Lab in 2022. Midwood Smokehouse out of Charlotte opened in Smoky Hollow in 2023, and City Barbecue, based out of Ohio, has two Raleigh locations. Investors with UNC ties jump into Professional Pickleball League. Former Tar Heel tennis players lead group that will own a Florida team. This article by Lauren Onosorge. A Raleigh tech company has purchased a Major League Pickleball franchise with plans to paint it Carolina blue. Major League Pickleball announced the formation of the new Florida team, the Palm Beach Royals, in August. The ownership group is led by Taylor Meyer and Zach Hunter, tech entrepreneurs and former tennis roommates at UNC Chapel Hill. The duo co-founded Triangle-based Hyperspace Ventures in 2017. Along the way, they developed a passion for pickleball, thanks in part to billionaire sports magnate Tom Dundon, owner of the Carolina Hurricanes. Valued at $16 million, according to Sports Business Journal, the Royals will make their debut in 2026. Joining Meyer and Hunter in the ownership group are fellow Hyperspace partners and UNC alumni Alex Rafley and Peter Fox, along with several limited partners, including people like Ultimate Software founder Scott Scheer, Advertising Week CEO Lance Pillersdorf, and Lyrical Partners founder Jeff Keswin. Former UNC star athletes Tyler Hansbrough, himself now a pickleball player, Deion Thompson, and Marvin Williams are also on the board. The story begins with Hyperspace Ventures, the Raleigh firm Meyer and Hunter launched out of UNC. Hyperspace specializes in software design and development for a range of companies. Its learning platform, Top Court, became a hit. Meyer compares it to MasterClass, but for tennis. As pickleball gained momentum, the platform added it to the lineup. Then came Dundon, who acquired the platform through his company, Pickleball Inc. "We got some equity in the parent company and started following pickleball very closely," Meyer said. "We saw how fun it was and how fast it was growing. When the opportunity came about in April, we put our names in the hat." Blue Cross NC offers employee buyouts as it looks to reduce costs. North Carolina's largest health insurer is implementing voluntary buyouts as it works to control rising costs. Blue Cross and Blue Shield of North Carolina has launched a voluntary separation program that was disclosed to employees September 30th in a memo from CEO Tunde Sotunde. "Healthcare is too expensive, and if we're going to demand affordability from a healthcare system, we must also do our part to take cost out of it," Sotunde wrote in the memo, a copy of which was obtained by Triangle Business Journal. Blue Cross NC, based in Durham, is the state's largest insurer, counting more than 5.2 million people among its membership. Today's program is underwritten by Highwoods Properties, with its headquarters in Raleigh, North Carolina. Highwoods, a real estate investment trust, is committed to making our communities better places to live and work. Highwoods can be reached at 866-449-6637. We've run out of time for today's episode of Triangle Business Journal. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed listening. Again, I'm Hugh Bennett, reading for North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.